Today's podcast is brought to you by Every Wednesday, a plan to inspire the people of Portland and support the place we call home. Let's get out of the house and spend some time with each other. Skip Zoom, meet for coffee, take your colleagues out to happy hour. Buying a gift? Ditch the internet and support a local maker by shopping in-store. Head into town every Wednesday and see what's going on at everywednesdaypdx.com.
Welcome to the Dive Podcast, presented by Willamette Week, where every Saturday we discuss the biggest news stories of the week with Portland's noisiest newsmakers, savviest culturistas, and some of the best journalists in the game. I'm your host, Brianna Wheeler, and I want to hear from you. So send your questions and comments to me, bwheeler@wweek.com. All right, y'all, enjoy the show.
This week, Anthony Effinger and I are talking about his cover story, The Death List, which I realize sounds maybe more nefarious than it needs to. The death lists we're unpacking are not about actual biological death, but are lists passed between investors concerned with the state of Portland's rapidly emptying skyline. On the concrete below, a homelessness crisis spirals, and in the clouds above, acres of climate-controlled rooms sit vacant because they are worth less than their debt. What in the free market fuckery is happening? Anthony, make it make sense. Oh my God, make it make sense. It's Saturday, August 19th, and this is episode 137 of The Dive. Portland is, or was, a marvel of city planning. Efficient public transit, super walkable, dense, but now, with a shift from 9-to-5 cubicle clock watching to work from home as the norm, those city plans kind of go up in smoke, unless the city pivots from a commercial downtown to one that embraces residences instead. Right? Is that wild or totally freaking obvious? Anthony will set me straight in just 1 second, but first, here's what I learned from this week's edition of Willamette Week. Lucas Manfield reports, 6 people have died so far this year in Multnomah County jails. Clemente Pineda was the 6th death of an inmate since May. These deaths are devastating, County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson tells WW, and something needs to change immediately. Nigel Jaquis reports, this week's big number is $252 million. That's the difference between what Oregon's struggling arts groups requested from the legislature this year and how much they got. On a per capita basis, we rank 36th in the nation in state spending on the arts. Oregon spends 48 cents per capita on the arts, whereas Minnesota, the national leader, spends $7.34, testified Dana Whitelaw, executive director of the High Desert Museum in Bend. Now, let's catch up with Anthony Effinger about his cover, The Death List.
In times of trouble in the real estate market, people send around these spreadsheets of buildings that are in trouble in one way or another. They're in foreclosure, they're in receivership, their loans are coming due, and there's questions about whether or not they have enough tenants paying the rent. These brokers tend to put together these lists to show, you know, the sort of the state of play, right? There's a number of big brokers, in town and around the world. They tend to be multinational or, you know, at least national, but they follow Portland pretty closely, like CBRE, Colliers, those kinds of folks. And they like to have their fingers on the pulse, and they do. And they send around these lists, and they say, here's what's going on with this building, here's what's going on with this building. Here's the vacancy in this building. It's incredible. It's an incredible amount of data. It's a science. And then the way they slice and dice the town, like the central business district plus a periphery, the north, you know, park block, you know, just like, it's amazing, the granularity. So a lot of this story was getting one of these lists. We got one of these lists, and then we took it down to the Multnomah County building and said, okay, I'm going to look and see how many of these buildings are actually documented, you know, in trouble, mm-hmm. right? So could we find something in the public record that said they had either missed a payment, for, you know, been foreclosed, gone into receivership, all the things that happen when you don't have enough tenants in your building, but you still owe money on a loan, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like a house, right? You know, if you got a house and you suddenly lose your job and you can't pay the mortgage, and say the house is worth less than the loan, that's, especially if the house is worth less than the loan you have on it,
yeah,
that's called being upside down.
Yeah.
And there's no real reason to pay a mortgage, you know, that's bigger than the value of the house. And a lot of that's what's happening now is a lot of these downtown, you know, office building owners are saying, you know what, it's just not worth it. So we've seen a few of those. I mean, it's, you know, there were probably 40 names on the list. Were there 40 names about on the list we got? And we found about 16 that had documented trouble. So mm-hmm. maybe there's, everybody says there's more to come.
Yeah. What happens when a building, when you go upside down on a mortgage?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the logical thing to do? Is it to walk away from it? Is that kind of what happens?
Yeah. So here's an example. There's a brand new building in town called Field Office. It's beautiful. It's up on NATO, kind of under just the other side of the Fremont Bridge, kind of under there, you know, down by NATO and the railroad tracks. And it's, yeah, you know, it's, I'd say east of Slabtown. It's gorgeous. It's like kind of two, I think they're 5 or 6 stories. They're beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful buildings. They were built by a local developer who got lucky and sold them in, when did he sell them? I think he sold them in 2019 to Goldman Sachs and a company called Lincoln Property. And, you know, remember 2019, this was when, you know, tech companies were moving to Portland from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. You know, it was going to be the new thing. Tech yeah. companies wanted to be in cities. They didn't want to be in suburbs like, you know, the Bay Area, south mm-hmm. of San Francisco. They wanted to be in cities. They moved to San Francisco. San Francisco got expensive. They said, let's move to Portland. So you started getting these tech companies into Portland. Well, it made sense. Build office buildings to attract these people, right? And so they did. Mm-hmm. This company project, it's called, built this building and decided in 2019 to sell it. And it looked like a good bet for somebody to buy, right? Brand new building, roof deck, scooter charging stations, all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
Well, we all know what happened the next year. The pandemic hit, you know, and suddenly everybody's working from home. And that's just a seismic shift in work life in the world, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody thought you had to go to an office, or lots of people did. Now it's like, well, do we really need this stuff? So work from home happens, and then, you know, Portland had its share of troubles with, you know, a lot of vandalism and violence, and, you know, there were legitimate protests, of course, but then it tipped over into some just destructiveness, and that scared a lot of people off. You know, people didn't want to visit here. Those numbers fell. Companies didn't want to move here. Mm-hmm. So then you had a lot of empty buildings. So suddenly Goldman and Lincoln have this building that they owe money on, right? But they can't get any tenants, and the value of the building is probably decreased a lot. So what do? You can fight a bank. In a foreclosure, a bank comes after you and says, hey, you're not paying. We want the property. And that's a whole operation. In this case, it's there's a thing called deed in lieu of foreclosure, where you basically just turn over the deed and say, hey, we're not going to fight you on this, you know. But what these guys are doing is the lender is auctioning the loan. And that, I think that happened, bids were due like 2 days ago. So they're saying, hey, there's a $76 million loan on this building that we own, that the bank has this loan. Somebody owes us $76 million. They're not paying. Does anybody out there want to buy this loan?
When you buy the loan, do you buy the building?
Yeah.
So you could potentially get the building for, oh my gosh.
A lot less.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot less. Yeah, I mean, people are talking about maybe going for half, you know, and it's going to be a real telling sale, because we're going to find out where, we might find out sort of what people think this stuff is worth.
Yeah.
You know, and this happened already once. There's a beautiful building in town. It was one of the first skyscrapers ever built. It's called the Commonwealth Building. Mm-hmm. And it was designed by an Italian architect who went on to do the Pan Am Building in New York, right? He helped with that. And it's the first sealed kind of skyscrapery thing with, you know, air conditioning. You can't open the windows. It's, you know, and it's a modern marvel built in, I think, 1948. And I think somebody had a loan on that thing for something in the 40 million range, I think, if I remember correctly. And that went to that building went to auction, and an affiliate of the lender, which was MetLife, paid 15 million for it.
Whoa. Right, so there,
that means, if I understand this correctly, that, and I've spent a lot of time trying to do that, somebody, they said, hey, does anybody want this? Nobody came forward. So the lender put in what's called a credit bid for $15 million. Yeah, and that's just a giant, giant, you know, haircut.
Wow.
And it's sad. I mean, you know, I mean, look, somebody, some, at some point, these things are going to be a deal. Unless you think Portland's going to be Detroit, at some point, these things are going to be a deal. And, I, you know, I'm 58 years old. I've covered a lot of these crises, and there's always somebody out there who is bargain hunting, bottom fishing.
Yeah.
And those guys often make a lot of money. So at some point, somebody's going to say, hey, wait a second, this has gone too far. Mm-hmm. And they'll start buying these things. But I don't, a lot of people say we're not there yet.
Hmm.
We got further to go. There's still too much office space, too few tenants. And, you know, the Portland's brand is just hurting.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
It's just hurting.
The image of the Montgomery Park building on the front, to think that that is empty or that it's decrepit or insolvent, it's heartbreaking.
Well, they've only gotten, so far, they only have liens. They've got some big liens. Somebody did some work for them on a renovation, and they went and filed a lien, meaning they're saying, hey, we were not paid.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty extreme. Like, that, usually people work that stuff out in private, right?
Yeah.
They're saying, hey, we're not getting paid. What's the deal? So they filed a lien against it for, I think it's $2.1 million. It was a construction firm. So that's the only problem. I mean, that's the only sign of distress there. They are still up to date on the taxes. There's no sign that the lender is involved.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
What about some of these other buildings? What are some other through lines? Debt, devaluation, insolvency?
Yeah,
is it combinations of all three?
A lot of this, so the funny thing is, well, not the funny thing, but the interesting thing is, there's not a lot of Portland's old line property owning families on these lists, right?
Yeah.
You're not seeing the Menashe's on there. You know, you're not seeing some of the people who own a lot of property, the Goodmans. You're seeing a lot of people who are from out of town and bought stuff 16, 17, 18, 19,
mm-hmm.
those years.
Yeah.
And they probably paid a lot. And money was basically free back then. If you remember, interest rates were super, super low.
Yeah.
Right? Because the Fed was trying to, you know, get the economy, you know. They've been low since the financial crisis of 2008, which is probably where the seeds of this all were planted. Anyway, so, you know, they had cheap loans. They had plenty of tenants. Everything looked good. And now they got no tenants, and if you need to refinance that loan, say your loan's coming due, say you borrowed 10 years ago and that loan's coming due, you've got to pay it off. Guess what? I mean, freaking mortgage rates for a 30-year mortgage right now are 7.1%.
Oh my gosh.
And that's a 30-year fixed residential rate.
This isn't just a Portland phenomenon, though. Did you compare what's going on in Portland to...
Oh, no, it's not. No, absolutely not. No, and that, listen, that's the big debate that's going on in our town right now. Right, you got a whole bunch of people out there who were saying, you know, this is all because of Measure 110.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Don't take care of, you know, we're not prosecuting people who are smoking fentanyl, and it's all just a Portland problem. I mean, they understand that it's at work from homes, at work here too, but they really, really focus on, you know, Portland's problems. But I tell you what, the numbers are no good anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe a place like Salt Lake, is doing better. They've got like, I think 19 or 20% office vacancy. Mm. But like the worst is San Francisco. San Francisco's the worst. They're at, say, what are they at? 31.9. We're at 31.5. And then below that comes LA, Seattle, those kinds of places.
Mm-hmm. So these are like downtowns turning into ghost towns?
Yeah, it's downtowns. And so it's the West Coast cities, right, mm-hmm. that are really at hammered. And New York's not doing great either. New York Magazine had a big piece, looked a lot like ours, about what's going on there. The Midwest, strangely enough, is where people are actually, they're asking people to go back to work mm-hmm. more aggressively. I saw some numbers on this. So in the Midwest, people are, you know, getting back into buildings.
We're on a downslide now. So when this kind of craters out, is this the beginning of those buildings changing over into, is there a residential future for these buildings, you think?
That is the $400 million question. You hit it on the head. I mean, and I think the answer is we don't know. So New York has had some success with that. Downtown New York used to be the financial district, right? Mm-hmm. The little streets around Wall Street and down that way. They're all like cute little streets because that was, you know, those were cow paths in old, you know, New Amsterdam, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes a great residential neighborhood.
Totally. Super right? walkable.
Cute. Yeah, it's like near the water and all this. We had friends that moved down there. They loved it. You know, all those buildings, they were older buildings. The windows opened. They had floor plans that were small so you could have windows into every room because you have to have windows in residential. You can't have, you know, you can't have an interior apartment with no windows, sure. right? So these monster buildings are going to be tougher. But the smaller ones that have windows into every room, the problem is the plumbing. You have to put in a lot more plumbing, yeah. right? And I don't know that we've figured this out yet. The thing I keep thinking about, though, is, you know, Soho and Chelsea in New York, those are old industrial buildings that artists turned into lofts.
Yeah. I think there's a blueprint for this.
There is. I think these buildings are a little more challenging, but something's going to happen. I mean, something, where there's a will, there's a way. I think somebody's going to, a lot of people are working on this. Mm-hmm. I'm not up to speed on the latest, greatest thinking. But I'm sure the big minds that are bigger than mine and everybody, a lot of other people, are working on this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, hell, you could have bought the Jackson Tower, you know, right across from Nordstrom, you know, with that clock in it, right mm-hmm. above Pioneer Square.
Beautiful, iconic building.
They had an auction for that thing the other day, last Friday, they had an auction, and nobody showed up. Not a single bid. Right?
Unreal.
So it was another situation where the creditor, J.P. Morgan, bid, I can't remember what they bid, $7.5 million. Because that was, they just were like, all right, we'll take it for $7.5 million, right? They're not going to let the whole thing go. And so now J.P. Morgan owns that building, and they got to figure out what to do with it. And it's a cool, I mean, you could have, that's an old building. It's got windows that open. It's got an elevator, you know, that goes through it. And you could have, like, each of those floors could be a condo. Mm-hmm. I haven't been in there, but it fits the bill.
Forgive this ignorance, but what stops the city from bidding on these buildings? Like, why wouldn't the city take it over and do something yeah. cool with it?
That's a good question. I think it would be money. Hmm. I think it'd be expensive. I guess if it got cheap enough. I did not explore that question. Maybe that's the next thing we should look at, is what do municipalities do in terms of buying buildings? It's an interesting question. I mean, I think the city right now has a lot of trouble doing what it's trying to do at the moment. I'm not sure they should fight this off. But who knows? It's a good question.
Big thanks to this week's guest, Anthony Effinger, and thank you for joining me. I hope you'll join me again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you.